This is Sansum Speaks, informing and educating our community on important health topics. We believe the more you know, the more you will get out of your healthcare experience. Presented by the Women's Council of Sansum Clinic.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kurt Ranselhoff, the CEO and Chief Medical Officer at Sansum Clinic. These talks, like the one you're about to hear, are filled with valuable information presented by some of our most distinguished healthcare providers. Just a reminder, the information in this episode was current at the time of the recording, but please be aware that medical information is constantly changing. Now, on to the show. We are here to talk with Dr. Ryan Fonte, one of Sansum Clinic's highly trained ophthalmologists who practices at the Ealing's Eye Center at our Foothill campus. Dr. Fonte received his medical degree from the University of Colorado School of Medicine in Denver, and then he completed his internship at St. Joseph Mercy Hospital in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where he stayed and then did his residency at the University of Michigan, Kellogg Eye Center. He joined Sansum Clinic's ophthalmology department in 2014. Ryan, welcome. Delighted to have you here. Let's start maybe first with how you got here. And I don't mean did you ride your bike here today, but how did you become interested in ophthalmology?
Well, first, thank you, Kurt, for inviting me to do this. When I first kind of, the first experience that I had that impacted my decision was actually when I was a kid. Around the age of 9 or 10 years old, I had developed nearsightedness. I was actually quite nearsighted. And the interesting thing when you're a child is you don't know that anything's wrong. And I remember traveling to Arizona with my family, and we had actually gone to an NBA game. And I was so excited to go to the game, and I'm watching the game, and I can't see what's happening. And I hear the crowd cheering, and I'm asking my parents what's going on. And that was when they realized that there was something wrong. And we quickly realized by kind of testing my vision that I was not seeing what the rest of my family was seeing. And so soon after that, went to see an eye doctor and had, fortunately, it was as simple as just getting glasses. And I'll never forget when I did get those glasses, just the impact, just the wow factor of seeing clearly. And particularly looking out the window and seeing the trees. And to me, they had always been these big green blobs. And to see those individual leaves was just really, it really made an impact on me. And I think that, later on in when I was in medical school, I realized that I kind of had a knack for procedures. And so ophthalmology was just a really, it was a really great fit for me because it allows me to do a surgical subspecialty and also be able to help people and have an impact, hopefully a positive impact in their lives, similar to what I experienced as a kid.
So how old were you when you finally got some glasses?
I was in fifth grade, I believe. So 9 or 10 years old.
Like up until that point, I mean, if you just like, was the blackboard in classroom a blur?
It's hard to say how long it had been going on for. A lot of kids who, are reading often at that age will develop nearsightedness. And so my guess is it had probably been happening for a few years, maybe a year.
Well, that's a really good, that's a great story. And what a way for you to really give back with that background. When I was looking at your CV, Ryan, I thought, well, you really spent some time in some cold places. And, tell us how did you choose Santa Barbara and how do you like it?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, my wife also grew up in San Diego. So it was a little challenging to convince her to go out to Michigan for the frigid winters in my residency. But I flew here in December to Santa Barbara to look at Sansum Clinic. And I remember flying out of Detroit. It was below zero that day and landing in Santa Barbara. And it was, a beautiful 75 degrees. So that was an easy choice after those 4 years in Michigan.
I can't remember if we took you to lunch at the beach. We sometimes would do that with people who came out from the Michigan in the winter.
I think it was near the beach. Yes.
maybe you could talk about, what it was about, not just the weather, but maybe what about the Sansum ophthalmology experience that kind of attracted you here?
In terms of just Sansum Clinic in general, I was really attracted to the fact that, for me, patient care is what I'm most passionate about. And that's how I enjoy spending my day. And what's great about Sansum Clinic for a physician is that we have the staff in place to negotiate insurance contracts and run the business. And that just really allows me to focus my day-to-day energies on, you know, what I'm passionate about. I think the other big thing was the multi-specialty nature of Sansum. The fact that we have this integrated model with, you know, primary care doctors and a variety of subspecialists who can easily communicate back and forth, you know, share notes and discuss patients. That's just, it's such a great experience for physicians in that model, and I think also for patients.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think there have been times when I've seen, been examining people and thought there was something wrong and, you know, called you up and just sent them right over, which is, you're right. It's a great treat for doctors to have that opportunity. And I think for patients to have that access.
Definitely. And having access to the patient's chart just right there and all of their other doctors' notes.
Maybe you could tell us, you mentioned your day. What does your work week look like? You mentioned that you're in the operating room sometimes and in the office.
Yeah, so typically for me, I spend one day each week in the operating room, mostly doing cataract surgery, sometimes pterygium surgeries. I also spend about one day each week doing minor procedures here in the office. And that usually entails injections, intravitreal injections for patients with retina conditions such as macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy. Also do laser procedures on those minor procedure days. And then the rest of the week, the other 3 days, I'm just in the clinic sitting down and talking with patients.
You mentioned cataracts, which I think we all have heard of. You know, certainly physicians are familiar with them, but I think lay people have heard of cataracts, but maybe you could explain, you know, what exactly are they?
The eye is much like a camera, actually. And when we're born, we have this clear kind of flexible lens in the eye. And the job of the lens is that incoming light is focused onto the back portion of the eye. And for most healthy patients around the age of 60 or 70, that lens will start to get more rigid and also it will start to become foggy and opacified. And that's what a cataract means. And so in practice, for a patient, it's kind of like they're looking out at the world through a dirty window all the time. The most common things people notice are that if they try to drive at night, those headlights will kind of hit that foggy lens and the light will scatter and it floods the vision. So many patients tell me they don't feel confident driving after dark anymore. Another really common symptom is difficulty with reading, needing more light to read, having to really turn on bright overhead lights, and then just a general kind of deterioration or fuzziness to the vision.
You must be able to relate to your patients when you replace the cataract and they must feel like you did when you were in fifth grade.
Yes. I mean, definitely. I think it's very similar to what I experienced. And it's really interesting when the cataracts get to a certain level, it impacts patients in their day-to-day activities, just like it did for me. You know, there are a lot of patients who have hobbies, you know, creating art, maybe a sport, and they can't do that the way they used to. Also in just kind of day-to-day essential activities, a lot of patients say that they can't read comfortably or that they don't feel safe driving anymore. And actually a recent patient that I had, for example, this patient came to me saying that he had a grandson who played baseball and he just loved going to the games and seeing his grandson and following those games. And his cataracts had gotten to a level where he could no longer clearly follow what was happening. And he couldn't even recognize his grandson on the field. You know, fortunately, after his cataract surgery, there was a dramatic improvement in his vision. And he, you know, was able to go back and participate like he had before.
You know, that symptom of difficulty driving at night is certainly one that I think even internists recognize as cataracts. Are there any other kind of symptoms that are really typical of certain eye conditions that people should know about?
Yeah, I think another big one is for macular degeneration. That impacts, going back to kind of the camera analogy, that impacts the back of the eye. It's kind of like the film in the camera is being damaged. And many patients, when they develop wet macular degeneration, will develop what we call metamorphopsia, but what that means is that lines that you know are straight look like all of a sudden they're bent or wavy. And so we definitely warn our patients who have the beginnings of macular degeneration that if they ever notice that the door frame suddenly looks bent or curved to call us right away.
Huh, interesting. That's a good one to know. Thanks. Audience will appreciate your using a word that probably most people haven't heard. And I'll just comment to the audience that ophthalmology charts are almost indecipherable to anyone but an ophthalmologist. You know, you mentioned cataracts, and what are some of the other most common conditions that you see?
You know, as a general or comprehensive ophthalmologist, I feel comfortable taking care of most eye conditions that come in the door. But, you know, most frequently I'm seeing patients with retina conditions like macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy. We see a lot of patients who have pterygia. You know, the nice thing too that I didn't mention previously about our ophthalmology department is that we have the full kind of spectrum of ophthalmology subspecialists. And this is really unique in our community in terms of a practice model. We have a cornea specialist, we have retina specialists, oculoplastics, pediatrics. And so we really have the ability to provide care for almost any eye condition patient who comes to our facility, similar to what you'd see in an academic center.
You know, Ryan, as an internist, I certainly am used to giving a lot of vaccines. And, you know, I think some of the vaccines, particularly the shingles vaccine, might have a real impact on conditions that you treat. Maybe you could talk about some of the, at least the preventative vaccines that can keep people away from trouble with their eyes.
Yeah, so I definitely recommend the shingles vaccine to all people who are over 50 years old and don't have contraindications. Unfortunately, we see way too many patients who have developed shingles along the ophthalmic nerve. And, you know, that's, for those who don't know, that's the nerve that goes to kind of the upper face and the eye. And, you know, there's currently about 1 million cases of shingles in the United States every year, and about 1/5 of those involve that ophthalmic nerve. So it frequently, you know, goes to the eye. And when it does that, it can have significant morbidity for our patients. We have, unfortunately, many patients who have permanent corneal scars. Some patients develop glaucoma as a result of this. Actually, previously today, I have a patient who in 2020 had shingles and she's still suffering from blurry vision and pain in that eye 2 years later. And so I highly recommend considering the shingles vaccine. It's over 90% effective in preventing shingles. And there's a new version of it that was FDA approved in 2017.
Yeah, really, really a good point. Thanks for making that. I think we may have already gotten a sense, but in your day-to-day practice, you know, what is the kind of thing that is really the most satisfying thing for you to do, or you feel, you know, that you were really fortunate to be able to do something for someone?
You know, I think going back again to the cataracts, that's a big one. Just because when the cataracts get to a certain level, patients are, their quality of life day-to-day deteriorates significantly. And so to be able to help restore some of that day-to-day function is really rewarding. And I'd say macular degeneration is another one. You know, there are injections available for the wet form of macular degeneration. And it's really, it allows us in many patients to restore vision that's been lost and similarly kind of help a patient improve, actually see improvements in what they're able to do.
You know, Ryan, a question often comes up is, if you think you're fine and you don't seem to have any eye symptoms, you know, how often should an adult, you know, be going to the eye doctor just to be sure everything's okay? And if you don't think there's any problems, why should you go to an eye doctor?
Yeah, it's a really good question. The thing about a lot of eye conditions is that there are many eye conditions that are asymptomatic until the very late stages of the disease. Glaucoma is a good example of that, where often patients don't know that they've lost, you know, much of their peripheral vision until it's down to a very small central field. And so if we can detect these conditions earlier on in the course, they're just much easier to treat and much more vision can often be saved. And so generally speaking, kind of rough guidelines for a patient who is 65 and older, the American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends once a year seeing an eye doctor even for a healthy adult who doesn't have eye problems. And then for that group of patients who are a little younger, from say 55 to 65, it's about every 2 years. And then in that, an even younger group of kind of 40 to 55, the recommendation is about once every 3 years.
Another thing that might be good for us to know is on TV, you know, you see a lot of sometimes ads for eye products. Like, there's a lot of these blue blocking lenses that you'll see on TV advertised for the computer. You know, what are they? Is that something people should really invest in? Do they work? Maybe you could help us out.
So, you know, I don't routinely advise my patients to go out and buy those blue blocking lenses, but there are some benefits to blocking blue light. There's kind of two factors. The first is called chromatic aberration. And what that means is that in the kind of visible spectrum of light, blue light has the shortest wavelength. And so that blue light is more sharply focused by any lens or visual system. And that creates a blurry image. So I don't know if you've had the experience of looking at like a blue neon sign at night, but a lot of times those signs look very blurry. And it's because of how that blue light is focused more sharply. The other factor is that, you know, blue light has a role in circadian rhythms and our sleep cycles. And so exposure to blue light in the morning actually kind of makes us more alert and more awake. And then the problem is that nowadays for work reasons or for just for personal reasons, many people are on their screens late in the evening after, you know, it's dark. And so exposure to that blue light can actually suppress melatonin and make it so that you're less drowsy in the evening and have more trouble going to sleep. So I don't think that the blue blocking lenses are more safe, more healthy for the eye, but there are some situations where they can, you know, maybe help you sleep a little better or have a little bit sharper image on your screen.
I think iPhones have a setting like where you can change from a daytime to a nighttime kind of lighting pattern. Is that something that you'd recommend?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the like the night shift mode, and that's doing exactly that. It's taking the blue light out of the screen. And so I use that, you know, if I'm reading in bed before I go to bed, I do that.
You know, the other thing obviously that we see a lot of ads on TV for are sunglasses. And, you know, should we be wearing sunglasses when we're out in the sun? Or if you're not bothered, should you not be wearing? Does it matter?
Yeah, it does matter. I think in terms of when we think about prevention of eye conditions, wearing UV protection and wearing sunglasses or a hat, it's really important because UV light has a role in a lot of eye conditions. So a few examples are cataracts, for one. We think UV light exposure accelerates cataracts. Pterygia. Pterygia growth is often kind of has a role. UV light has a role in that. And so it's, I do recommend that from a prevention standpoint.
You know, I think for those of us who are beyond our 40s and 50s, we can remember in our 40s and 50s, perhaps when we kind of were realizing we started to hold things further away from ourselves. Or as you know, I like to go fly fishing, and I thought they really changed the size of the hooks on me without telling me. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, what's going on? Why is that happening? And what should people, you know, do about it?
Yeah. So going back to that camera analogy, we're born with this kind of clear, flexible lens. And when we want to look at something that's close to our face, there are muscles in the eye that kind of flex, and the lens actually changes shape to allow us to focus up close. And that's called accommodation. And what happens to almost everybody when they hit their mid-40s to late-40s is that flexible lens in the eye starts to harden, becomes more rigid, and it doesn't flex and change shape like it did in earlier years. And so we call that presbyopia, and that happens to essentially everybody eventually. And, you know, so there are a lot of patients come in asking me, what can I do for that? They find it very frustrating that they're holding things farther and farther from their face. And so some people are getting a lot of eye strain because they're trying to kind of tough it out. And so there's a couple options for that. One is just the over-the-counter readers. Those are great. They provide extra focusing power, and most people with those do quite well. Another option is called monovision. And what monovision means is focusing one eye for distance and focusing another eye for reading. And so this can be done by wearing a contact lens in one eye to make that eye focused up close. Or it can be done with refractive surgery with LASIK or PRK. And so we see a lot of patients who find that that just adds convenience to their life and not having to be reaching for glasses or taking readers on and off all day. And I should probably mention there is one other new thing on the market. There's actually an eye drop that was recently FDA approved in 2021 and has also kind of been in the news. And this drop contains pilocarpine. And what it does is it, when you take this drop, it constricts your pupil a little bit, and that helps to focus a little bit for reading. And it also stimulates that muscle in the eye, the ciliary body, that helps us to focus up close. And, you know, this drop, what I'll say about it is when it was studied, there was a significant improvement in reading vision for about 30% of patients. So, you know, some people found that it did make a difference, but I think for most patients, it's going to be those first couple options that I talked about.
You're mentioning some recent developments. When you're looking forward in your field, you know, what do you see coming on the horizon that's going to be of interest to our listeners?
You know, I think one really cool thing about ophthalmology and one thing that attracted me to it is it's often on the cutting edge of technology. And I think one area is telemedicine. We're increasingly seeing cameras that are really good at taking photographs of the inside of the eye without even dilating a patient. And so if these cameras can be deployed to areas where patients maybe don't have access to an ophthalmologist, those images can be sent, remotely to an eye provider or even to software that kind of reads that and can flag an issue. And so I think this is really neat, and it's going to allow people to kind of triage and get at least some attention sooner for potential problems. I think another one that's really interesting is, and I had mentioned that we give a lot of patients injections in the eye. And the unfortunate, these injections are miraculous, but the problem is that they don't last, typically they last about 4 to 8 weeks. And so oftentimes patients are coming in to see me, you know, 8 times a year, 10 times a year for an injection in the eye. And that just becomes, you know, a real significant burden over time. And so there's a lot of work being done to try to create drugs that last longer. And so perhaps patients would only have to come in once a year, you know, once every 6 months.
Yeah, it seems like the kind of thing probably patients aren't really looking forward to having an injection in their eyes.
No, it's, you know, I think the idea of it, the thought of it is probably the worst part, but it's still not something that people want to have to do.
Switching gears, Ryan, maybe you could tell us, you know, what do you like to do for fun?
Two of my big hobbies are tennis and gardening. And so Santa Barbara is ideal, I think, for both of those things. I play in a lot of local tennis leagues and probably play tennis about 3 days a week. And I also really enjoy gardening. I really enjoy really spicy food, extremely hot, spicy peppers. And so I've taken up kind of growing habanero peppers. I currently have a white habanero plant that's doing quite well, and ghost peppers. And what's nice about those is that the birds and the squirrels leave those alone.
So can you grow peppers hotter than you can buy?
Yeah, you know, the peppers you'll find, the hottest peppers you'll usually find in the supermarket are a habanero. But I've definitely found some. The ghost pepper and the white habaneros are often even spicier. And I think I'm the only one in my family who likes them.
Well, if your family and the squirrels aren't eating them, I guess you're going to be in good shape to have them all for yourself.
Indeed.
Well, Ryan, that's we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. It's really great that you can educate our patients on the expert care you provide. I think, you know, your work, and you mentioned this during our talk, is really a good example of kind of the, you know, big city medicine that we're really able to provide here in our small town and at Sansom Clinic. So again, I thank you for taking the time, and we look forward to having you back another day.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. And that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us. We hope you found this to be valuable information. Remember to subscribe to Sansom Speaks, available wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.